Which saying is true? Out of sight, out of mind, or absence makes the heart grow fonder? Which one is true? Birds of a feather flock together, or variety is the spice of life? How about these? Don't worry about tomorrow. Store up treasures in heaven. The older I get, the more I see that either-or statements like these describe the range of human experiences that humans live, rather than serve as absolute either-or statements in fact, a fact, or more elegantly said by Thomas Mann, a great truth is a truth whose opposite is also a truth. I've come to live in a world now where I see things in terms of both and rather than either-or. With all of these possibilities in front of us, then, how shall we live? And will we live by default or by design? Living by default means we take what we were taught as we grew up and we accept it as just givens forever. We never examine what we were taught. And the best example I can think of this is food. By the time we're just a few years old, we have been taught by our families, our cultures, TV, what is considered good food, what is bad food, what is a treat, and what isn't even food at all. Insects, fried or ground into flour, are staples in many countries. They're even treats when dipped in chocolate. I find a worm in my salad, I'm going to feel queasy, because I was taught that worms are gross. They are not excellent sources of protein. So many of our assumptions about the supposed truths of life are like that. We're taught something, and it's our default forever. This is a great time saver and necessary as a foundation of civilization. We can't be reteaching things every time a new baby is born. But the opposite is also true. If we never examine our default settings, there is no change, either positive or negative. Right now, Americans are being challenged to examine our default settings in major ways. The way things have always been isn't working for many, for millions. There's a great opportunity and a great danger in this challenging time. How do we navigate it? Well, the first is to be aware of our fears. Be very honest about our feelings of being confused and lost, of not knowing what to do. This whole year has been one long, well, we'll call it an opportunity, to name our fears, to be afraid. Fear of contracting a new disease. Fear that our social fabric is unraveling. But after the awareness and the honesty with ourselves about the fear and the discomfort and the confusion that these admittedly cause, I have a word of reassurance for us. Human beings are very adaptable. One of the reasons there are people on every continent on the globe, and even some up in a tin can in space, is because of our astonishing capacity to get used to a new normal, given time and some level of awareness of our powers. I still remember watching an episode of Bewitched. Does anyone remember Bewitched? And in it, I think it was Agnes, one of those goofy witches, conjured up from the past George Washington. And George Washington got loose from the house and went out and was on the curb and saw first cars, which startled him, and then a bus came up and opened the doors to him, and he thought a dragon was eating him. Now, we all know what to do with a bus. Buses are normal for him, for us, but not for George Washington. He was scared to death. You know, it's amazing what we have become used to in our lives. As Carolyn Hecks put it yesterday in the paper, whatever is novel in our lives eventually becomes old, familiar, normal. Tell your truth, possibly have some confusion about what's going on, but then just keep going. Confusion is the byproduct of uncomfortable change, and this change, like any other, will wear into something familiar eventually. Well, how long does eventually take? That's where we have important choices to make as we face our futures with change. Because every choice we make shapes the future we're going to live in eventually. Some choices we make with great intention, and others are made out of our defaults, or at least without much thought. Either way, either kind of choice, both kinds of choices shape the future. They shape our future. Stephen Covey, the author of The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, which was all the rage when I was in business in the late 80s, and I just looked at it again preparing this, it's still a really good book. And Stephen Covey explores the second habit, which is begin with the end in mind. He asks, what do you want? What do you want? How do you want to design your future? What do you want it to look like? If you don't design it intentionally, he says, you'll create it by default. But either way, not only will those choices shape your future, they'll shape the future of those whose lives you touch. A drunk driver goes out and drives and hits another car. He's shaped not only his life, but the life of the other person. Someone stops to help someone along the road, the side of the road, and they change not only their life, but the life of the other person. Choices have impacts on others. A choice made by someone in Wuhan, China, has touched millions of lives. Pretty sure it wasn't done intentionally, although I know there's people who disagree with me. Now, don't confuse shaping with controlling. No one who has lived through the first 6 months of 2020 is going to be able to claim that anyone can control all that happens to them. Even when we don't have control, though, our choices matter for our tomorrows. What values are you going to use as you begin with the end in mind? Well, here's some values for you. First one who came to mind was Wallace Simpson. Who knows who Wallace Simpson is? Okay, Wallace Simpson married that English king who abdicated. She was an American divorcee, and they fell in love, and he abdicated the throne to his brother to marry Wallace Simpson. And Wallace Simpson's beginning with the end in mind was, you can never be too rich or too thin. So with those values, what's her life going to look like? It's going to be a life shaped and centered on money and appearances. Now, Adolf Hitler, since we're in World War II with that group, and Adolf Hitler, religion and skin color determined whether you were fully human, or if you were not fully human, you were subhuman and could be exterminated at will. If that's the end you have in mind when you begin, the future you shape will be centered on racial purity and status. But what values do we have? What values do Christians have? Well, the obvious answer is we're supposed to have the values of the reign of God. Those values from today's readings are truth, righteousness, justice, love, hospitality, compassion, healing, life, peace, and generosity. Very specific examples are given with regard to strangers, prisoners, and those who suffer. That's the easy part. It's not so easy to put them into practice, each of us in our individual lives. And if we have a room full of people, we may not even agree on how to do it. And that's okay. That's okay. The life of discipleship is not about being right, but being intentional. Intentional in the face of our fears and insecurities. Choosing the way of Jesus over the default priorities taught by our culture. As we shape our own future by our choices, and as we touch others' lives by those choices, we have to constantly ask ourselves whether what we're about to do or not do, because not acting is an action, will make that person think they've been touched by a bit of heaven or experienced a moment of hell. So this may seem like a silly example, but it has shaped my life for 20 years. Not long after I was ordained, I was at a diocesan convention up in Ohio, and Gus and I were going to come down to Florida for a while, a weekend or so, and I had read most of an Anthony Trollope book. Now, if you've ever read Anthony Trollope, it's hard slogging. They're good stories, but it's pretty dense prose. And I had finished all but a quarter of it. It had taken me about 5 months. And I'd renewed this book a bunch of times, but I was, by cracky, I was going to finish it on this trip. So I went to the Whetstone Library, with the book. And this was back in the day when you could see who checked out the book before you. You remember those days? And there was a stamp and all of that. And took it up to the counter. This guy was there. And I said, I would like to renew this book. And he looked at it and he goes, you've already renewed it 4 times. You can't renew it again. And I said, I've only got a quarter of the book left. Now, I'm all collared up. Remember I said I'd just come from convention? I'm all collared up. And I said, I just got a quarter of it left. I just want to finish the Anthony Trollope book. And he goes, but the rules are you can't renew it again. And I looked at it, and I said, no one has checked this book out before me since 1973. That's the Nixon administration. I think you can renew it one more time. And he looked at me, and he goes, fine. I mean, now, I could have handled that 6 other ways. One is I could have just taken the book back, walked out, and paid the fine when I got home. 10 cents a week, I could have handled it. I could have taken it and said, okay, check it back in, and told Gus, go check out that book. But that's not what I did. Instead, I gave this poor guy who was just doing his job experience of hell by a priest. I've never forgotten that, obviously, and I have remembered that for the rest of my life when I'm looking at clerks who are just doing their job with other people who are just trying to do their best. Am I going to give them a slice of heaven, or am I going to give them a moment of hell? So here's what I think I know. God's project for creation is to restore it, repair it, so that everything is just and righteous as God created it to be. That's God's future, God's tomorrow. In fact, it's God's eternal life right now. It's already true for God, where God lives, and God is calling us into that, and calling us and all of creation into that healed future. Jesus, God with skin on, came to live among us to show us that future, to show us how to live tomorrow's life today. As we, like he, live in the midst of war and disaster and disease, we are given a glimpse of what it's supposed to be like. Striving to bring the reign of God close to people, bring the kingdom of heaven near, is not a safe way to live. It wasn't for Jesus, yet fear and death did not stop him. Following him, we might not always be safe from the world either. Yet with him as our helper, we can risk being agents of heaven, practicing truth, righteousness, justice, love, hospitality, compassion, healing, life, peace, and generosity as best as we understand them. And we must realize that people may question us, criticize us, hate us, because that's what happens when values clash, when humans want to shape very different futures for themselves and for others. So be intentional. Begin each day with God's end in mind as best as you understand it. But don't worry. Don't worry. Just strive to live tomorrow's life today. That's how Christ is here in the world now, when we're striving to live tomorrow's life today. Making this wounded world a better place. That should be our normal way of living. Looking for ways to heal. The reward for doing this truly is God's eternal life.